This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Fresh off of the debut of Rampage Friday night. Those of you who are waiting for it after this audio, little bit of a bonus audio. I still have yet to record my review of the Suicide Squad. A lot of people have been asking for my thoughts on it. I'll give them to you. First of all, rest in peace to the creator of the Real Hero Archive, Jamal Hepburn. Died unexpectedly yesterday. I had access at one time, or I used the Real Hero Archive, I believe. If you've seen Japanese wrestling, or if you are now currently a fan in some way of Japanese wrestling, I would say the Real Hero Archive is in some way responsible, because that's the guy who kept everybody on the internet afloat at one time when content was hard to come by. I had never had an interaction with him. I just knew the name Real Hero Archive. Didn't use it as much as other people did. Chris, were you a heavy user of it?
It was essential for me when I was trying to like learn about Japanese wrestling. I don't know, about like a decade plus ago now. I was watching stuff on that all the time. And then kind of when New Japan was in its big peak in the last decade there, you know, I'd be watching current stuff, and then I'd be watching old Vader matches and stuff in Japan, old Jinsei Shinsaki, a.k.a. Hakushi, and Hayabusa matches, and lots of great stuff.
You are a Jinsei Shinsaki fan. We've done a podcast about that at one time.
He does a thing for me. I just really like his match style.
I spent my weekend watching a lot of old Midnight Express stuff, so I'm still reeling a bit from Bobby Eaton. Just watched his last run in Memphis, which I had never seen. That's interesting, but yes. Sorry to get off on that tangent. Rest in peace, Jamal Hepburn.
For sure. I just want to say one thing real quickly in memoriam. Like, what this guy did was like so selfless, and he just kept putting this content out there and shared this art. Right before you and I got in the air, we were talking about videos on YouTube and that sort of thing, and like art and the changing nature of content. And I think on some level, like, you know, to kind of, I can't take a debate off air and bring it fully on air or whatever. But like, one thing I think about that's like a real positive in this new, more sort of like public commons, public good thing is like, it gives people a chance to see stuff that they otherwise never would have seen. And it's subtle, but like for me, it probably I know for sure it was a key part of me having a New Japan World subscription for a very long time. So the free content that Jamal put up, you know, is actually good for the business and good for the industry. And people like that are doing a real service for our broader culture and for the industry.
One of the dangers of recording on a Thursday night is that things tend to happen on Friday.
You wanted to do it. You wanted.
Yes, I
knew it was a bad idea. I knew it. But nothing could talk you off of it.
I had to watch the Suicide Squad, which came up on Thursday night right after we stopped recording. So I watched it then, but as SmackDown went to air, while it was on the air, 13 people getting cut from NXT, including two who were going to be on 205 Live on the 205 Live after SmackDown,
and a couple of North American champions.
Yes, interesting enough. Waiting, though, this long to talk about it, we got a little bit of a follow-up in this week's Wrestling Observer. Thank you to Dave Meltzer for this. The cuts, guess who didn't have a say in them? Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Road Dogg. Nope, these were all the work of Vince McMahon, Bruce Pritchard, and John Laurinaitis. going down there. It appears that there's a bit of internal tension between NXT and the main roster, which was also why Karrion Kross lost to Jeff Hardy, which is also why Aaliyah pinned Dakota Kai on main event, even though Dakota Kai is going after your women's title on the next takeover. There is some pettiness going about, but first, let's talk about the people who were cut. Here's the list for those of you who have been living in a cave, perhaps. Bobby Fish, he of the Undisputed Era. Former North American champion Bronson Reed. Mercedes Martinez, one of the best women they have on that roster. By the way, she's already booked a Deonna Purrazzo match. I'm here for that. Tyler Rust, 1 week after they re-debuted the Diamond Mine, pretty much. Kona Reeves, a little more on Kona later.
Yeah, no, I mean, just a darn shame. Kona Reeves is a real star in the making.
You know, you and Lanza, going off on your Kona Reeves tangents here, I'm going to defend him somewhat. Because it's not his fault. Oh, former North American champion Leon Ruff. I am taking the victory lap on that one. That they were never going to rehab him. It was only a 2 week joke thing. Up yours, people who told me I was wrong.
I was with you on that one too.
I was
with you on that one.
Jake Atlas getting his Andy Dufresne from Shawshank release here. That's a guy. We'll talk about that in a bit. R.A. Sterling, a.k.a. Alex Zane. Denzel DeJournet, a.k.a. Desmond Troy. That's one I got some big thoughts on that one. That kid was done dirty, I thought. Zechariah Smith, a basketball center who never made the air. Asher Hale, Anthony Henry, who was one of the hottest properties on the indies at the time he was signed. Giant Zangier, Indian wrestler, prospect, tall. That's all you need to know. And referee Stephen Smith, or Stefan Smith. Now, interestingly enough, part of this revamping of NXT will also be, apparently internally, the rumor is, nobody under 6'2", nobody over 30. Chris, first initial thoughts before we go down the list.
I think the one that immediately jumps out to me is Bronson Reed. I think this is another guy, similar to Leon Ruff, where after he lost the title, I was like, oh no, they're done with him. Like, it wasn't, oh, they're calling him up to the main roster. I thought they were done with him. It's unfortunate because I think that Bronson Reed's actually pretty good, and I think he's got a lot of personality, and... You know, I like this new Ozzy Jones guy that they're running with, but they're like going too over the top with him. And I thought Bronson Reed was kind of more of a happy medium on that, a little more like of a subdued version of what they're doing with Ozzy Jones. So it's unfortunate with Bronson Reed. Tyler Rust, I mean, having him get pulled from the Diamond Mine, if you're Malcolm Bivens and you're Roderick Strong, you got to be really wondering how much longer you're going to be at this company. Because... they already cut Roddy's girlfriend.
I think they've tied the knot, but yes, Marina Shafir.
Yeah, Marina Shafir. I don't think they never have seen what we see in Malcolm Bivens. So, yeah, I think he's probably in trouble here too. Those are the big ones. I mean, Leon Ruff. Look, he never should have been North American champion. I think that the Leon Ruff run did damage to the belt, which needed to gain prestige, and at a time when it needed to really gain significant prestige as a mid-card title, the Leon Ruff and then the Bronson Reed transition and then the non-committal nature of the Bronson Reed push really hurt the belt. And... yeah, I don't know. It's a failed project over there right now.
Bronson Reed's biggest detriment is that he's not 6'6". Otherwise, he'd be in the league. I mean, he's a big guy, but he's not the tallest fella in the world. He's Australian. And there's something about Vince's dumbass, pardon my French, bodybuilding mentality, where you can be strong, but if you're not ripped, you're not jacked, if you're not chiseled, if you're not cut, then he thinks you're a fatty. Now, thank God he was cut before they gave him something like, you know, fat boy gimmick, as opposed to thick boy, where he's eating like a chocolate bar while other people are working out or something. You know,
I think he's very lucky that he didn't get stuck with the Bull Dempsey latter days treatment.
Yes.
And it's entirely possible that he could have been saddled with that. And I think that for Bronson Reed, this is... It's hard to call it a blessing in disguise because WWE is a six-figure contract if you make it onto the main roster. However, in terms of being able to make money over the next 8 to 10 years here, which he's only like 32, he can still do that. AEW and the broader AEW network of companies, Impact and even Ring of Honor too, offer, I think, Bronson Reed a better opportunity to shine.
Anthony Henry's going to be the guy that gets a couple of dark matches, and they'll see how the crowd reacts to him. He's that good. He's very good, but he's 32. He was stuck on 205 Live where nobody was going to watch him. You know, he'll be fine doing super indies and things right now. Mercedes Martinez, I thought this was a trainer deal, so this surprised me a bit. She's going to be fine because she's just awesome. Okay, she's still awesome. She's 40. That's probably why they cut her, but she still has a couple of years in her. And she was never going to be main roster because Vince can't cast for crap. Leon Ruffiger, Jake Atlas gets a do-over. Plain and simple. AEW wanted Jake Atlas. AEW was dying to bring Jake Atlas in there. Jake Atlas was going to be their Jungle Boy before Jungle Boy.
Jake Atlas, this might actually work out just fine for him. Like, you know, it might not be a bad time to get on the AEW trolley. And if he had been on in the early days, maybe he would have gotten lost in the shuffle.
Yeah. And look, they have 4 shows now. They put him on, they make him the Jungle Boy of AEW Dark Elevation and start building him up. He'll get the swag again, I think. I think he'll be fine. PWG is going to book him. Defy is going to book him. Ring of Honor may take a flyer on him. Impact is always there. He's one of the top tier guys that's going to be out there, and he's going to have offers, and it's just going to be a matter of where he wants to go.
And he's 26, so yeah. It's fine. I don't know why we think mid-20s is even remotely nor towards peak at this point.
Well, it's because of the athleticism of the guys. I mean, when you're 40, you can't be... I mean, there's the law of diminishing returns. See Rob Van Dam and Chris Jericho still trying to do moonsaults into their late 40s.
Okay, so you transition your style and you change up your style and you modify. I mean, I think Jake Atlas...
Which, by the way, you're allowed to do in every company... Except WWE.
Right, and okay, Atlas is a gymnast, but that also, to me, entails, as he gets older and maybe transitions to a bigger frame, he'll still have pretty good flexibility underneath him, and he might actually be able to have really good longevity. I mean, we could be very well talking about a guy who's got another 15, upwards of 20 years left in his career.
Yeah, now...
DDP Yoga is doing wonderful things out there all the time, Jeff. All the time.
No, I was trying to find a good way to transition to Kona Reeves. Your boy, Jeff, mocked Kona a little bit. When they gave him the money gimmick, when they gave him, what was it, the best, or what was it? He was, they were trying to basically make him into the Rainmaker, and I called him Focata. And he deserved that nickname. The gimmick was terrible. What they did with him was terrible. All he was doing was the main roster. I'm going to do my poses, and I'm going to do this and that. He is tall. He's like 6'5", 6'6". He's in his, I think he's 30, 31, 32, something like that. He should be on the phone to Shibata to join the Los Angeles New Japan Dojo tomorrow. There is still time for Kona Reeves to be something. Am I saying he's a worldly star or whatever? No, but if Fred Rosser, a.k.a.
Darren Young, he's on NWA right now, and he's still
he's
doing
on
stuff.
NWA too. Yeah. If he can revitalize his career, Kona Reeves, if he puts his mind to it and focuses and gets some real training on how to be a badass, there is still some hope for him. His drop kick is pretty awesome. He has the aerodynamics. Get him on a weight routine as well and build up that body of his. There is still a chance for him. I know Joe was burying him bad on the flagship this week. We'll get to a minor Joe burial in a bit on my part.
I think sometimes, and I don't want to make a pointed comment on anyone, not because I'm scared of the network. They don't even know I'm here. They fired me 5 years ago, and I've just kept doing shows. But I think sometimes we mistake the gimmick with the actual performer and like what the actual assets of the performer is. And in the case of Kona Reeves, he was really saddled with that horrible, I was trying to think of, like, as you were describing the gimmick, it was the best. It was like I like the best wine, and I like the best books, and I like the best music. And it's like, it's not even Rick the Model Martel. It's like nothing to latch on to it, and it's annoying.
It's a hook. It's here's your costume. Put this on. See if it fits. That's all it is.
But it's I think it lacks a hook. Is sort of my thing in the sense that it's annoying, but it's not something that actually breeds contempt. It's not something that actually like is really hateable.
I'll get to the one that baffles me because I thought he had a lot of upside. That's Denzel Dejournette. He's only 26. Former wrestler at Appalachian State. We may remember him. He did a lot of prelim stuff early in the pandemic because he was around. He was on the main roster doing... He got killed by Sheamus. He got killed by Seth Rollins. When Ciampa and Timothy Thatcher were having their feud, he was the guy that they both beat on successive weeks. That's him. He had a singlet. He looked a lot like... as Rob put it, the street prophet who is not Montez Ford, D'Angelo Dawkins, or Angelo Dawkins. And he, you know, he looked like he could, if they gave him kind of a shooter gimmick, it would work with him. And then they renamed him Desmond Troy. They beat him twice. They beat him in the tournament early, and then they cut him. If I'm him, again, maybe Shibata. I think another guy is, I think MLW, under that kind of Tom Lawler type of stable where he's bringing in guys with like MMA backgrounds and things like that, I think he could work there. I think he just needs to go somewhere, get some real training instead of doing tumbling drills for 8 hours a day. And he still has time to be a star if he wants to be a wrestler still. That's the thing with him. But that's a kid I saw a lot in when he was first put on TV, and then they just beat him and they beat him. And they beat him some more, and then they go, well, he's never going to be a star because we beat him so much. And you're just like, okay, great. Chris is playing with his cat.
Yes, she's very, very nice. Denzel Dejournette, I think, is another guy who has... He got experience there, but he didn't get exposure, and that can be good in the sense that he can rebrand to be whatever. He didn't get saddled with a goofy gimmick during his tenure there, and, you know... That's always the worst thing possible, in my opinion.
I'm going to ask this general question now, because there's the tension now between Triple H and basically they're saying that the people who are afraid of Triple H when he takes over are the ones that are cutting him off at the knees to Vince. And that just screams Bruce Pritchard, Kevin Dunn, and John Laurinaitis to me. Reckless speculation, but...
No, I think that's right. I mean, I think a guy like Kevin Dunn in particular, Triple H has made comments about Kevin Dunn's production style in the past. So I think that is probably still there. And I think if you look at the early days of NXT, a lot of the early production of NXT when Hunter was really, you know, under control of it, very much felt like a reaction to the way that Monday Night Raw and SmackDown was shot. You had longer angles. You had like all the lights down. You didn't have nearly as much jumping around and stuff. It was a very, very different vibe on the early days of NXT. So I think it's right to assume that Hunter's got that political enemy. I think the other part of it is that maybe the D-Generation X boys are not necessarily the wrestling booking brain trust that they might fancy themselves to be. I think maybe Hunter's lost like his stroke a little, like lost his touch a little bit, but not really kind of, you know, it's not really a surprise in this sense. We've been seeing Hunter get like quietly demoted multiple times now. So I think that the rumors about like, you know, a bit of a political leverage play on him make sense given the backdrop.
Well, he's also in an impossible position because he's doing a job that they've never done well in WWE. I'm about to ask you if NXT creates stars. Anytime WWE has had a developmental territory, the vision of the people running the developmental territory who have to make money to stay afloat is always different than the vision of the guy up top. Like OVW, when it had Brock, Randy Orton, Cena, Batista, and stuff, Cornette in that territory didn't want to push Batista out of the gate because he was green still. He didn't know how to work, all those other things. So Batista gets up to the main roster and they go, why doesn't this guy know how to work? It's like, well, because I'm taking my time trying to train him. When Vince just sees body guy and goes, give me that. Now, NXT has never had any need to make actual money because it was always kind of a side project there to go after the indies. Did it create stars for NXT? Yes, it did for a while. Did it ever create stars for the WWE? Maybe Drew McIntyre, maybe Kevin Owens, the Horsewomen certainly, Alexa Bliss, yes. But, you know, now that it's on actual television, it has a dual issue. Number one, the people who watch main roster don't care about NXT all that much. They're two completely different audiences. Number two, it's never had, when it debuted on USA, it was there only to take up space, to take the oxygen out of the room for AEW. The thing about that was, they never said, what's the point of this? They never said, oh, this is where you'll see the stars of Raw and SmackDown tomorrow, because they could never guarantee that. They just put wrestling on and said, here it is. And everybody just went, oh, that's more wrestling. And they kind of tuned out.
Yeah, I mean, they really put out NXT in this go up against AEW thing as a heat sink. There was no actual plan or angle or sort of key thing to guide this war. Like, you know, when Vince is going to war against WCW in 96-97, he settles in on Austin, he settles in on Michaels, D-Generation X, key characters, key angles, things that are going to fuel the war. And very later on, very clearly, Austin. Like, Austin is my weapon against WCW. And to a certain extent, D-Generation X rolling up in the tank at WCW as well. But, like, these are angles and programs that were designed as things to go up and compete against something. Vince has not been making a product that is designed to compete against anything, let alone sleep, which is apparently a big competitor these days. What were you going to say?
No, no, go ahead. I'm about to transition into the second part of my point, but finish yours.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you look at this NXT run over the last year and a half here, what has been the guiding storyline? It's not like the Karrion Kross, I guess he got injured, but it's really hard to imagine a scenario where we got 6 months of Karrion Kross and it was really good shit, brother. You know that it was gonna be like goofy and like Fallen Prey, or like Scarlett gets kidnapped and Karrion has to save her, or someone breaks the hourglass and Scarlett's like, the hourglass, and like that's a whole thing, and then Kross has to get even with that. Like, it wasn't gonna be a fun 6 months. They didn't have an angle that was going to be riveting, compelling stuff, because they don't even know how to book like that anymore. Whereas AEW is setting up stuff that has 3 month, 6 month timelines, and it's clear that these things have trajectories.
Gargano could have been huge, but now he's wearing a mustache and wig and doing, it's a me, Mario. And Ciampa was hot for about 2 months there too. But yeah, they're not building
the Gargano Ciampa thing overstayed its welcome. I think that's an argument. I think they made Gargano and Ciampa into stars.
I do too.
Yeah, I think that's a fair argument.
I think people are blaming that feud, though. Those people that are doing that, they're wrong. It's not their fault. Nobody came up in the pipeline. I mean, Velveteen Dream, they wanted to be a hot star. Trouble arose there. But here's this will transition to the second half.
But real quickly on Dream.
Okay, go ahead.
I think that's a good one. Yes, obviously we know about Dream's problems. Let's suppose that there's a different person settled with the Velveteen Dream gimmick of a similar level of skill or maybe even better than Patrick Clark Jr. I think that Velveteen Dream push was well on its way to being a main roster star. And like that would have been an example of a character that they had came up with that was main roster ready and would actually be someone I could credibly make the argument would have the ability to crack into the merchandise sales for WWE and actually be a real merch moving star.
Oh, Chris, this just goes great into my second point here, because old Joe Lanza on the flagship last week was doubting, let's say, that the Fiend moved any merchandise because he hadn't seen anybody who had any Fiend merchandise at any show or in the wild and all these other things. Well, so happens that some of the people who listen to WWE, or listen to WWE, some of the people who listen to this show, heard about this and dropped into my box and asked if I could forward a message to them. They get an internal memo, WWE employees do, of shop sales for the week based on talent. Now, Chris, here's the issue. Looking at this latest one that we had, because they wanted to show us the Fiend sales around WrestleMania. They wanted to show us last year, and they wanted to show us right as he was cut. Bray was always top five, if not number one, in terms of moving merch. But, it goes into a bigger point of this tension between NXT and Vince and creating stars. They are not creating...
Isn't it crazy that we didn't mention Bray Wyatt at all and did NXT making stars? And yes, NXT made the Wyatt family. and the guy's clearly a star by the numbers.
Yes, and he has decent merch. That's the other thing is they suck at making merch on the NXT roster and even the main roster. It's just they put a name with a weird font and a graphic, and they expect people to just buy this up. There's no real thought to it unless you're already a merch mover and people care and there's care about the brand to not turn people off necessarily. But here it is. I'm going to give you the top 25 shop sales between July 26th and August 1st of this year, the week that Bray Wyatt was cut. And how many stars is old Vince and his brain trust creating? Let's take a look. Bray Wyatt, number one, Legend Inactive is his brand. Number two, John Cena, part-timer. Number three, Roman Reigns, Big Dog, on SmackDown every week, Universal Champion. Number four, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Legend Inactive. Number five, the SummerSlam Las Vegas unisex t-shirt. Not a talent. Number six, Alexa Bliss, who has been given the Fiend gimmick, and that's mostly on the basis of the sales of that stupid Lily.
I gotta tell you, though, don't gloss over the event t-shirt thing, because the event t-shirt thing is important in this sense. People are, right, they're not buying into a star. And it's the same $20 you could have pulled out of your pocket and paid for any star, Kofi Kingston, Big E Langston, whoever it is. And instead, you're like, I don't know, I just want a shirt that says I was here. That's not good.
Yeah, the Lily plush doll is a big seller for Alexa Bliss right now. I know that seems weird to people, but it is. Number seven, NWO. Not there anymore. Legend Inactive. Number eight, The Undertaker. Not there. Legend Inactive. Number nine, Edge. Part-timer on this last run. Number 10, Eddie Guerrero. no longer taking calls. Eddie Guerrero is the number 10 guy moving merch in the WWE, and he hasn't been around for a while. Number 11.
And he didn't have that long of a push in WWE either. Right. A lot of his career was, and really the, yes, he had his peak in WWE, but like, he really was a WCW guy. And I mean, that goes right down to he was part of the invasion angle.
Well, no. Latino Heat is still big with people. That I'm gonna push back on that one.
Yeah, that's but he people... did the first iteration of that in WCW. Like the
Chris, trust me, in Los Angeles, that Latino Heat gimmick was huge. It was monstrous out here because people saw a lot of them in Eddie with the hoopty and the lie, cheat, steal gimmick. That was over way more than anything Eddie did in WCW. I love WCW Eddie more than WWF Eddie, don't get me wrong, but the character, which I found slightly tinged with racism, let's put it that way, over huge with crowds. Let me get to the rest of this top 25. 11, The Rock, not there. Sasha Banks, number 12. On SmackDown. She is right now the biggest women's star they have, and she is a star, and she has one foot out the door to go live in Star Wars land.
And right now they have her positioned as a heel, too.
Yeah. Number 13, Hulk Hogan. Really? Guess. That's the one that kills me, though. It's like. People have forgiven Hulk Hogan. Okay, cool. Number 14, Ric Flair, no longer with the company. Number 15.
Imagine wearing a Hulk Hogan t-shirt in 2021.
I can't.
I can't.
Number 15, Daniel Bryan, no longer with the company. Number 16, Rhea Ripley on Raw. Number 17, Drew McIntyre on Raw. Number 18, Finn Balor, who's just been made to look like a geek over on SmackDown. That'll kill his merch. Number 19, Kane. Kane is number 19 in your top. Number 20, the RK Bro shirt, which is considered inactive as well. Or that just may be because they put as a team. But I am under the opinion that RK Bro is dead after Monday. Number 21, the Macho Man, Randy Savage, no longer taking calls. Number 22, Bianca Belair on SmackDown. Finally, some new blood on this list in addition to Rhea Ripley. Number 23, Bad Bunny, still doing merch. Number 24, the SummerSlam drawstring bag. And number 25, Bret Hart, legend, not on the show. Where is this plethora of talent? Where is their gear on here? Where is Owens and Zayn and,
buying the SummerSlam t-shirt's really bad when you're not even at SummerSlam. Like, that really is the statement of, I don't care about these stars. I'm going to buy the pay-per-view t-shirt for a pay-per-view I didn't even attend.
And they're paying for the SummerSlam t-shirt, mostly, probably, because to remember John Cena's run here. That's the other thing, is that Cena's the draw for SummerSlam. So, and maybe Goldberg, maybe, but this thing.
Well, if he was such a draw for SummerSlam, wouldn't we see it in the merch sales? I think maybe the tale of Goldberg not necessarily being that interesting is even borne out in the legend sales. If Kane's beating Goldberg, what does that say about Goldberg?
What does this say about this roster, though, that this should be full of guys that are your current stars, and it's nothing but member berries on this damn thing? That's the thing. And so if you're going to say, well, it's the PC's fault we're not creating stars, you have two rosters full of people who you haven't made worth a damn on this roster, Vince McMahon. And that's not creative's fault. That's not even maybe Bruce Pritchard and John Laurinaitis' fault. Don't get me wrong. They're higher ups, but the buck stops with you. You got to make some guys on here. And what you're doing is, well, Omos is tall. Commander Aziz is big. We'll just do these clownish angles to make them look stupid. Floor's yours for a second.
No, it's really frustrating because, like, here's one who you don't even really see in the list. Kofi Kingston.
You know, the New Day, there's nothing about the New Day on here. And they were your biggest baby faces. They were some of your biggest merch sellers. And they're not even in the top 25 anymore because you've dumbed them down to such a point.
Yeah. And Kingston is a guy who should be a star right now. You gave him a WrestleMania level push. You gave him Kofi Mania. He's not even moving merch for you. That, beyond the mistreatment of Kofi, I mean, it's sad that the fans have lost interest in him. I think it's just a really bad indicator for the company. And then, I mean, we need to get to SmackDown tonight in the Cena promo, but my head is still kind of spinning from the weird breaking of the fourth wall Cena promo that he did here tonight.
Well, before we go on, support for Shake Them Ropes is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technology developments to provide you with the best tools for your grooming experience. Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. Let's make that 3 million Shake Them Ropes listeners, because we have an exclusive offer for you guys. 20% off plus free shipping with the code ROPES at manscaped.com. They have sent us gifts. They have come bearing gifts. They have given us product. Both Chris and I are users. I am a user of their nose hair trimmer as well, which is spectacular, because as a bald man, it sucks. What happens to the hair is it sucks into your head and goes out through your nose and just grows out all over the place. But Manscaped has created the best ball hair trimmer ever, the Lawnmower 3.0, their third-generation trimmer featuring a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents. And thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology, I do now feel confident shaving my boys. I shaved them in the shower this morning. The trimmer comes with an LED light for a more precise shave and is waterproof to that fact. It makes your shower clean and easy. Much easier to shave in the shower with the steam and the relaxation than just dry shaving in down there. And just things can get bad. Trust me. I've nicked myself down there, Chris. You ever nick yourself down there? That ain't fun.
No, it's not. That's not a good place to be. You don't want to be nicking yourself down there. And if you have hot water and the kit for Manscaped, you're basically in paradise when it comes to this situation.
And then after you give your boys a haircut, after they're looking pretty, you know, in some high end barber shops, they put on a little bit of the cologne, a little bit of the aftershave, make you feel good. Well, Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0 also includes the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why are you not putting deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? The duck butter maker. Your balls stink, kids.
But beyond that, Jeff, it feels good. It takes paradise and makes it a little bit sweeter. Like ambrosia.
Like ambrosia. Speaking of sweaty and stinky balls, the Crop Reviver, their product along with the Crop Preserver, keeps your balls from sweating, smelling, sticking, running around like hoodlums in the neighborhood, talking to strange people, dealing drugs, you know, all the things that balls do in a neighborhood. But Manscaped threw in two free gifts in their perfect package. A pair of high-performance Manscaped boxer briefs that'll keep your junk, your fellas, feeling fresh all day, and a travel shed bag to store all your grooming goodies. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code ROPES. Remember the code there, Hawkins. At manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code ROPES, ROPES. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. We're happy they're back. I use their, as I was saying, Chris, when you kind of went away, I use their nose hair trimmer too. Look, if you don't want the Perfect Package 3.0, and why wouldn't you? Go to their website, put in our code. There's something for you guys, because all of us need some grooming help. So thank you for your sponsorship, Manscaped. Any final words for our sponsor, Chris?
Yeah, make your berries merry with Manscaped.
Ah, that's so great. I'm going to steal that for next week if we have a read ever again. Last other bit of news before we get into more general WWE talk. King and Queen of the Ring are both going to happen this year. Guess where the finals are?
Yeah, Chris? But where is it, Jeff? That's what I want to know.
The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, which already has a king. I get, you know, it was fine for women to be wrestling in bodysuits one match. That's okay. I think we're
Well, the idea here, especially when it was initially being pitched, is that this was going to be some sort of, among other things, yes, it was going to be good for business, but this might actually serve as some sort of nudging mechanism, culturally speaking. And, like, that's completely out the window. This is entirely a vanity parade for one warlord prince who has blood all over his hands.
I will take money for this show, though. I will.
I have nuanced views on the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
Very, very, very nuanced. Mine are a little different, but nevertheless. You know what? I'm going to go a little optimist slash positive on this, and I'll tell you why. I don't like King of the Ring. I don't like Queen of the Ring. I think they're stupid. I think having people... The biggest thing that King of the Ring does, it doesn't build up a contender for your title. No, it gives Vince a chance to dress somebody up in a stupid costume, have him pack a crown in his go bag, and you know, for Booker T speaking a funny accent and go around, he's the King of the Ring, and have an unofficial title feud with someone. If they can just keep King of the Ring and Queen of the Ring to Saudi Arabia shows, I am fine with that. Now, I know they're going to bring it back to the States, and I'm going to have to do something like, like, we've had King Corbin. This is going to be King Xavier Woods. I'm they're going to give it to him. They got to give it to him, right? He campaigns for it.
I guess, unless, of course, Muhammad bin Salman doesn't want that.
King Jinder Mahal. That's what we're going to get.
I mean, you say that jokingly, but it's entirely possible that Jinder Mahal ends up winning this. Because he's the type of guy that Vince likes to buffoon up, and you could have Shanky and the other guy as his loyal servants. Like, this is exactly the type of thing that Jinder Mahal type of character wins.
Okay, loose thoughts on the TV shows. That's the end of the news. Lazy River, wherever you want to go. You wanted to talk John Cena first, so let's go with it.
Yeah, so this Cena promo, I guess I'll start with this. Before we get into the Cena promo, last week I had this sort of penciled down as a thing we didn't get to. I didn't care for the Cody promo where he broke the fourth wall a whole lot at the end of the wrestling in the wrestling show. And we've seen this now with Cena too, and I don't think it works. Like, I don't, time has changed, but this, like, you guys know what's going on right now. All it does is pull you out of the show that you're supposed to be watching. It makes you think about, like, the broader industry and stuff. And so when Cena mentions CM Punk, when he talks about, you know, maybe I'll take the belt and I'll wave bye-bye, or when he mentions Jon Moxley getting ran out of town by Roman Reigns, or the fact that, like, Roman Reigns has been pushed down our throats for 10 years and it's taken a really long time to take. And that, among other things, like John Cena, of all people, supposed to be the guy who is going to right this grand wrong. I just think all of it rings a bit hollow and then, like, pulls you out of the scene. And that's unfortunate because I actually thought John Cena was really on tonight, and once he kind of settled into the 1-2-3 thing, I thought that that was a really solid John Cena promo, but he's always been given free rein to say what he wants to say, and I think this time his instincts really didn't do this company, which needs kind of steady and consistent good shows right now, any favors by reminding people that Jon Moxley's on the other channel and CM Punk's going to be there soon.
I'll get smacked down by our friends at SmackDown if I am incorrect on this. But let me ask you something, and maybe I'm wrong on it. I feel like their instinct here is what they tried to do with Cena Rock and what they did with what they've been doing with these types of feuds for the past few years. Did they outthink themselves and think that there were people who were going to boo John Cena? That were trying to get the whole, let's go Cena, Cena sucks type of thing going, and that there were people who were going to boo Cena because it's like week 3 and we're done with him, and that there are Roman Reigns fans cheering for him, and they're trying to get that 50-50 split in the audience when everybody's just happy to have John Cena back. Did I imagine that?
Yeah, no, I thought that was another thing I was noticing tonight, that the Let's Go Cena and the Cena Sucks chants were weaker. And maybe they get better at SummerSlam or whatever, but people don't hate Cena.
They're happy this time around because they actually have somebody.
And he's good.
Beat him.
Yeah. like outside, if he wasn't wearing the green t-shirt and the jean shorts, like if he was out, I mean, we've talked about this 1,000 times, but like if he was out there in just like a standard white button-up shirt in khaki slacks or in jeans or whatever, and just cutting this promo on Roman, like this is a great promo. Like he's a really engaging microphone talent. What he lacks in the ring, he more than makes up for in his ability to tell a story and work a crowd and do all the stuff that a main event level guy does. It's a privilege to watch him work. So it's I just have a hard time imagining anyone going, Cena sucks. I mean, even for nostalgia, you know, it's at this point, Cena's going to get the you sucks like Kurt Angle gets the you sucks. Like, you know, which happened briefly and then they're done because no one actually hates him anymore. He's not a 50-50 guy now. And I'm with you. I also think they're having a hard time finding the mark with Roman too right now. The Roman's reaction to Cena's stuff was a little too cute by half, I thought. He was being so subtle that I don't think it actually gave Roman any edge.
I would agree there. I think absence has made the heart grow fonder. Now that Cena's not on every week doing his shabadoo, I'm here in this town and we gonna party tonight. Woo! You know, that kind of annoying crap that he did every week. I think people are gonna like him in this run, and then they're gonna miss him when he goes away. And he's going to come back. He's going to be a huge baby face again. They're not annoyed by him because he's not getting shoved down the throat every week.
Yeah, he's not going to be on multiple segs. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to have him come out. He's going to do his seg. It's going to be maybe 10 minutes, but it's going to be on the shorter side of 15 minutes, generally speaking. And he'll be, and that's plenty of Cena. And it'll all be good. He won't overstay his welcome, or even if he does overstay his welcome, it'll only be for a minute or two. It won't be like some of the old shows in the last decade where Cena would come out in the first hour, in the second hour, and then wrestle a stinker of a match in the final hour.
First hour is that big pandering promo. Second hour is the backstage segment. Third hour, he comes out. He beats one of your favorite tag teams just to prove that he's a superstar. And we go on. Yeah, it's... Where'd you go? Oh, there he is.
I walk off screen sometimes because it's not, you know... Yeah, there's certain
things you're bored by me. I get
no, line. There's certain things we don't need to see on camera, Jeffrey Hawkins.
Thank you, Jeffrey Toobin.
No.
You know what isn't subtle, Chris?
Jeff Hawkins.
No, Mysterio Family Theater. We got another thing of that. Son, I don't want you to make a mistake this week. Oh, don't go out. Gee, Dad, I won't. Chris, did you know that Ray and Dom are father and son? Because I'll tell you, if you didn't know, Michael Cole and Pat McAfee both reminded you over and over again. And I'm going to tell you something, Chris. They've been father and son for 2 decades. And by the look of these segments, you'd never know that they'd ever met each other. Yes, father. Yes, son.
No, it's what Ray is talking to Dominic about, too. Like, these really basic fundamental concepts that you would just assume at some point between boyhood and manhood, Ray would have imparted this. Like, you know, remember, tag team wrestling has some certain nuances here, son. Like, Dad, I wish you told me this before I was 30. Jeez.
Were you in a coma this whole time when Ray was wrestling, and now you've come out of this coma, and now Ray has... impromptu Shake Them Ropes Theater. Ray gives Dom the talk.
All right, am I Dom or are you Dom? Who's Ray?
Do you want to be Ray?
Because I'll be Ray.
The meaty part. I'll give you the meaty part this time.
Okay,
go for it.
All right, son. Tonight we're gonna go out and we're gonna face Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler, and you need to keep your head on a swivel. Remember, there's two of them.
Chris, you missed the bit. The talk. Not this talk.
I thought it was a talk about tag teams.
No. Birds and the bees. If you still want to continue and be Rey Mysterio, I'm all for it. If you want to switch up, I can do that.
Son, I don't know if you've noticed this, but there are two different types of people, generally speaking, in this world. We are progressive here. But you might have noticed that girls make you feel a certain way sometimes, son. Do you ever feel that way?
Dad, I've noticed my body going through certain changes. And
you
I'm
are going through changes.
Father,
and it's
I am.
It's okay to be frightened.
As your son, this puberty scares me so. What do I do if I talk to a girl, Father?
As my son, it is important for me to give you advice as your father. And it's important when you're talking to a girl to remember to keep your head on a swivel. Because tonight we're facing Dolph Ziggler.
Father, what will I do if I have to use a prophylactic?
Son, I'm going to get this banana out and I'm going to demonstrate for you.
Okay, that's enough. Oh, dear God. Oh, God bless Ray and Dom, but this is some level one improv crap they're doing. Yes, it is. I mean, it's like...
That's generous, man. I mean, these guys...
Two ever been in the same room together? That's what I want to know. That's how bad it was.
At some point, you just have to try with Ray Mysterio and go, Ray, Dom... 30 seconds, let's spend 15 minutes here and we'll just do some takes and let's try to get one and see if they could just get something going, because like this stinks. And if you're gonna push Dominic, and I think the long-term angle with this is Dom turns on Ray, this has got to be more compelling, because the goal has to be to make Dom a star at the end of this.
Ray walks into frame, looks at Dominic and starts talking. Ray, don't read the stage directions, whatever you do. Oh, my only other WWE
Ray walks into frame and he says hello to his son. Hello, Dominic.
Turns, smiles. No, Ray, don't read the directions. What the hell's your problem?
The betrayal scene's going to be great, too. When Ray gets betrayed by Dom, that's going to be classic.
That's going to be so
barbershop window stuff. Yeah, it's going to be really good.
I take it back. I have 2 points. I'll get the weaker of the two out now as a refresher. Elias. Really? We're going to rebrand that guy? Just make him a babyface because people loved the gimmick back then. I mean, I figured out, Chris. It's going to be Elias. It's going to be Baron Corbin. The hobo army is back, baby.
This is another fine example. I think they're done with Elias. I think that they are just done with this. Obviously, they're done with the character. I think they're done with the performer. But this is a guy who, oddly to all of us who watch a lot of wrestling and who maybe watched Real Hero videos on the regular basis and like that kind of work rate, Elias is really over. People liked him. He wasn't mentioned in our merch sales like when we were doing our rundown, because like, you know, he hasn't been, you know, featured heavily in recent, you know, weeks here, and they got interrupted because of COVID, and he wasn't a big piece of the COVID, you know, era either, other than his Infinity Feud with Jackson Riker. But like, this is a guy who his guitar antics were over. People liked the songs. People were ready for him to be a babyface. People were ready to cheer for him. And the one time they made him a babyface, it was sort of going well until they started making it too comedy-ish. If he just came out, did his guitar thing, let everyone clap along as he cut a little promo on the person he was going to face, And then had his match and maybe won more of them than he lost, he was going to be just fine with these audiences, and he could have been a really good gatekeeper babyface to feed to a heel you're trying to build up.
Are they done with Jackson Ryker?
I mean, I don't know that they ever really liked Jackson Ryker. I think they were just using Jackson Ryker. Okay. He was, yeah, so I mean, they could be done with that guy tomorrow. I mean, look at the way they've been cutting people.
Well, I know a lot of people don't like it. I get it, but I was just asking the question.
No, I'm not saying. I'm not even saying because of his views on life or whatever, right? Like, I'm just saying, like, I don't think that the way they've been presenting him is we want to hold on to this guy. And I don't. I mean, inside the ring, yeah, he's got a good physique, but he doesn't really have a great match style or anything that's worth keeping.
Baron Corbin's going to win in Vegas, isn't he? That's the end game of it. I do not understand this story because there's no logical progression, because usually these are redemption stories and he's not redemptive. And I get that that's for the heat, but then it's just going to build more heat when he has money, right?
I mean, I don't know that's building heat. Like, it's just sort of they in a holding pattern. No,
he's
I know,
two
but
shows this.
Yeah, but yeah, but he's a schlub, and yeah. I mean to this point, you know, it's not like he sells merchandise. He's just a schlub character that they like overutilize.
Let's bring this into it, just because I'm looking for trouble. Our friend David Bixenspan, old Bix, thinks that this is Vince McMahon projecting his views on poor people. Any thoughts?
No, I think that this Baron Corbin character is almost more inspired by Steve Martin's The Jerk. Like, all I need is this candlestick. All I need is this chair, this candle. Yeah, like, all I need is a small $100,000 loan. I see more of an old-timey comedy trope thing going on here, and I tend to think with Vince McMahon, that's like he has like five movies that rattle around in his brain.
He may have finally seen The Jerk.
Right. It's old enough that it's finally, you know, acceptable watching for him.
And at the end of that segment, he stole the Money in the Bank briefcase. Are we doing this again for the second effing year in a row where we're not going to take this champion seriously, and somehow the briefcase is going to be taken? Although this may be setting up Big E versus Corbin for the briefcase.
That might be the deal. It's a ladder match for the money, and Baron needs the money, but he probably still loses it there, too.
I just do not. I hope they don't do the Otis thing again, where it's like litigation, and then it's a match, and then he gets screwed out of it. It's just make these Money in the Bank wins mean something, please.
I very much am anti taking the briefcase away, even by crook. When someone wins it, that needs to be binding. It's essentially like a Chekhov's gun thing, and like, you know, you can't like, once someone grabs the gun, you can't have someone run and just like snatch it out of their hands. Like that I think breaks some sort of storytelling rule.
Yeah, or I turn the bullets into magic beans as you shoot them. No.
But they're reverse bullets now. Yeah, no, the gun has to still work like a normal gun.
So, new Intercontinental Champ Shinsuke Nakamura.
King Nakamura.
That's right. Yeah. AEW having a hell of a week. The debut of Rampage, and I thought Dynamite was a pretty hot fire show as well. New Impact champion in Christian. I think that is a good move. I think all the belts except the AEW one are coming off of Kenny, because I think he's losing the AAA belt to Andrade at Triple Mania. I think this is a good way for. I don't know if they're going to keep Christian in the main event though. Still at All Out, I think. I think there are a couple of high-profile names, one who could show up in Chicago next week, who they might just put in at the top match immediately. But I thought this Kenny Omega Christian match was pretty damn good.
I thought so. I really liked this match. Yeah. I think Christian works a well-paced match. He takes a good high bump, and he knows when to use his high bumps, and he'll always take one or two good high off the top. Like, he'll either do a move off the top, or he'll take a fall from the top to the outside, and that offers some variety in the matches. When he needs to ramp up the pace, because he works slower earlier in the matches, that snaps into gear. I find his matches to be very, like, they sort of scratch a niche. They're kind of like a George Harrison solo in the sense that they have like four sections, and so they're a little bit predictable and blocky in that way, but I like that, and there's nothing wrong with that kind of format, and if it works, don't change it. I'm glad that he's champion. I think it'll give Impact a little bit of it'll give Impact, one, a bit of a nostalgia factor and some continuity back to their old days, but two, I also think it'll give them a nice through line back to AEW and maybe draw some eyes from AEW over to Impact as well.
2X having a good week on Dynamite this week, in my opinion. I thought 2.0 were pretty good. That might be Dark. I'm thinking of that. It's all coming together, but they're having a nice little run here for a month, and they're going to be in a tag team match next week with Sting and Darby Allin. Seems they've landed on their feet.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Oh, one last thought on the previous topic. I think CM Punk, when he comes in, there's a decent chance he gets inserted as the special guest referee for the Kenny Omega Christian Cage match. And that's how we get Punk into the initial fray. I don't think they blow off the Cage thing entirely. I think Christian has a match against Omega where he loses so that Omega can get his heat back a little bit, get his momentum back, because he's still got to drop these other belts. So he's kind of got to like balance that out a little bit as the champion of sorts. But you do need to get Punk into the action as soon as possible. Ever-Rise 2.0, I love them. I love who they're paired with, too, this Daniel Garcia. I think he's great. I think that Ever-Rise he's a good foil for them. They're a good foil for him.
Dante Martin, pretty damn spectacular in that opener on Wednesday.
Yes, I thought so. The only reason I'm hesitant on this is that, like, on Dynamite, I liked the entire show minus the Bucks Omega match and Jericho's match with Wardlow, because it's been a lot of Jericho recently. And
let's talk a little bit about that. That's a good transition. Rampage, we have a four-man booth, and Chris Jericho is in his full "I hate that guy" mode all friggin' night. I know they put him on there to bring energy, bring Mr. Energy in. But man, it's just too much.
When we were talking about John Cena earlier in the show, and we were talking about how, like, the bad old days of John Cena, he'd be in way too many segs, and like what makes him good is that he's in just the one seg and then you're done with him. This is how Jericho should be getting used. He should be in one seg a show, and that's it. And they've got him in the booth going through a multi-week ordeal thing with another match with MJF that has been going on for months. Like, there's just too much Jericho right now. We should be seeing no more than 10 minutes of him on every show.
Yeah, it was funny. There's a moment I watched, I think this was Dark Elevation, maybe. The one that White's not on, the one that's just Excalibur and Taz, is that Dark or Dark Elevation? I watched both and I can't remember. But
I think it's Dark Elevation.
Okay. Excalibur, they have this back and forth, and it's only for the improv geeks in the audience, which is basically me and a couple other people. But Excalibur sets up Taz, and it's the wingmen coming up, and he goes, "Man, Taz, you've been in a lot of locker rooms. You have a lot of relationships with a lot of guys in there." And he goes, "Yeah, a lot of guys." It's like, "What's your thoughts on the wingman? Never talk to them." And Excalibur is just like, and if I got this from somebody in AEW, Excalibur was like, "That was such a jerk move." So he had to kind of put Taz in his place. He goes, "You know, Taz, someday I'd really just like to do a Herald with you," because improv is all about yes and, but, yeah, the that popped a couple people backstage at AEW as well, just putting Taz in his place. Thought Taz was okay here, but Jericho's a little overwhelming. One other thought, especially on this Rampage show, Britt Baker, of course, a mega babyface in Pittsburgh. That said, I like the idea of having regional babyface, like hometown babyface, but heel everywhere else except in her hometown. You know she's going to be huge there. Why are you introducing Jamie Hayter for a post-match beatdown at the end of this show? Because they cheered that, Chris, and that's not supposed to be the reaction here.
No. I thought that this was a good match. This main event was a good match. This should have been a double turn. It would have been white hot. Everyone would have absolutely been nuclear for Britt Baker to try to win the match. You should have had Red Velvet annihilate Rebel on the outside.
And stomping on that arm, and never take
the crutch from Rebel and use it on Britt Baker, because that's only going to make Britt hotter. And here's the thing. I get the regional babyface argument. Problem with that is you put so much mileage into Britt Baker loves Tony Schiavone, which is not a regional babyface. That's an entire AEW babyface. If you're coming to Tony Schiavone's aid, you are not a babyface just in Pittsburgh. You're a babyface everywhere where AEW runs. They've put time into that. I also think that Red Velvet is going to get booed now anyways coming out of this match, so you might as well have went in that direction. Britt Baker is too popular. It's not like Red Velvet's going to get her babyface heat back next week. She's not. She's going to be stuck in the mud here a little bit right now. I should suspect. Maybe I'll be wrong, and if I am, I'll own it. But I think that this should have been the Austin Hart double turn played out with Britt Baker and Red Velvet. Make Red Velvet your new heel. That this is a vicious woman who will do anything to win the title. And I'll tell you what, I know it's a little WWE, oh, you're going to make her lose in her hometown. You got to have her lose in the hometown. I want Red Velvet to look like a killer, because she's going to be an undersized heel coming out of this, and she needs to be an undersized heel champion who will do anything it takes to win. I thought the debut of Jamie Hayter, like, she looks great, but I thought that was mistimed. I didn't think it was, I mean, to your point, when Britt Baker is stomping Red Velvet's face into the belt, the signaling that AEW was trying to do is, remember, everybody, Britt Baker's actually a heel, and Red Velvet's a babyface. And you know she's a babyface, everybody, because, remember, she's cheated in all these matches, or Britt Baker's cheated in all these matches against Red Velvet. Here's the problem. Even before we were in Pittsburgh, or well, actually, I guess we had this in Dynamite when they were in Pittsburgh, people were already cheering all the antics. And actually, no, the week before we got to Pittsburgh, people were cheering the antics. No one holds Britt Baker cheating to win those matches against Red Velvet against Britt Baker, and that's a key problem in trying to keep Red Velvet babyface, or keep Red Velvet at babyface at that level. So unless the goal was to de-push her, which would be stupid, because Red Velvet is money, this should have been the opportunity and the time to turn her heel and, dare I say it, make her champ. I know Britt Baker is white hot. Here's the deal. She's going to be a star regardless. She's a star with or without that belt at this point. She's a great champion, but she's made. This is the time to make Red Velvet. This was the time to make Britt Baker an absolute pure babyface and the leader of this division. And I don't think this match accomplished either, even though it sort of had her over in Pittsburgh.
I do really like Red Velvet. I think she's improved quite a bit. And I do think she could play a good heel. I wanted her to take a powder, though. That first time they locked up, I just wanted her to go out. I wanted her to play this heel thing up. And she didn't quite get to it, because you saw there were moments where it's like, oh, is she going to go after the arm or not? That's why you bit on it being a heel turn, I think.
Well, she did it a few times. And then during the break, this is also a really questionable decision. During the break, we have Rebel come in and hard cheat on behalf of Britt Baker on Red Velvet, which I thought was just questionable booking, because you want to present Baker as a baby face in Pittsburgh. And if you didn't, then don't hand out the friggin' towels.
More on questionable booking in a second, but I will say this. AEW mics their crowds great. This crowd for Rampage was fantastic. It felt like a very 1980s crowd. They were hot for everything. The crowd for Dynamite 2 was pretty darn great. Whatever they're doing, it doesn't feel like the cold miking of a WWE thing where it's like there's no sweetening to me going on with the miking here, as opposed to WWE, where you can tell things are being sweetened. It doesn't feel artificial to me.
I agree. I guess we'll mention it now before we move on to the next topic, before I like it slips out of my brain. One thing that does keep, you know, in the back of my head is, because it's like my job too, like the current coronavirus numbers are continuing to tick upwards, and I just keep wondering how many more months of running these big live events AEW and WWE have left. And I will say this, as I said last week, if the clock kind of strikes midnight here and they're not able to run live events anymore and it's back to Daly's Place in the Thunderdome, that is a really bad situation for WWE, because we know they don't make good television in the Thunderdome. And the roster is only more depleted now than it was. I think AEW is winning this like hand over fist.
I don't think either is going to shut down. That's just at this point.
Eventually things will, there will be a point where they're not able to run in many states, or they're going to have to run with many restrictions. Or they're running nonstop in Florida and Texas in perpetuity. And even
that's what I think.
No, but here's the problem with that. So then these cities are at loggerheads with these governors. And where is WWE going to run? Out in Waco, Texas? No, they're going to try to run in Houston. They're going to try to run in Dallas. They're going to try to run in Austin. They're going to be subject to the city ordinances. And that could place a problem for them. They're going to try to run in these states with favorable governors. But the big metros that they need to hit don't necessarily have the same laissez-faire, just go ahead and take your chances approach.
Let's talk bad booking to sum up. Do you have anything else for AEW across the board?
A strong week. I mean, Rampage, yeah. About as strong of a debut on Rampage as you could get. I thought it was just an energetic show. I'm looking forward to watching it next week. It was easy cheesy. Like, it was my third hour.
An hour and you're out.
It was my third hour of watching, and I was like, yes, this is fun. I enjoyed this. And 1 hour is a good vehicle for them to have one good match every week, two matches of people that they want you to get into, and they're out. Maybe an angle.
Oh, here's the other Arcane reference I was proud of tonight that I made. Do you remember? Were you a big UWF fan or not?
I've watched a fair amount. I've come around on it. I haven't sat and actually done like
not,
sequential.
Not Abrams. The Bill Watts one.
Yeah, the earlier one.
Okay.
Yeah.
You remember Mike Boyette? 0-50 Mike Boyette.
Yes,
they just
yes,
did
yes,
that with Fuego del Sol, and they did it great. I thought that the entire thing was great. You've lost all these times. Now we're going to give you a contract.
Oh, well, was good about it is it was important to get the audience behind him and have that moment where the crowd was really into him, so that it signals to other audiences. And this is, I think AEW is doing a really good job getting their audience reactions right now. Signaling to other audiences that Fuego del Sol is our lovable underdog. Sammy likes him. We love Sammy. Like, that was good. Tony Khan on camera
likes him. Yes, they care about him. That's why I was going to go with the Tony Khan thing if you didn't bring it up, but continue.
Yeah, Tony Khan on camera and then Jericho doing that ridiculous, extremely loud line of Tony Khan's ever been on camera ever before. I remember when he reversed that Kenny Omega thing a few months ago.
Please use your voice, Chris. I love Jericho. But man, this latter stage Jericho is killing me right now. Let's end with NXT of any variety. NXT UK did nothing for me, so I don't care.
It was a nothing.
Although they're putting Joseph Connor in a shark cage, and I'm telling you, make him bait. Throw him in the ocean.
How dare you? You say NXT never makes stars, and Joseph Connors is there.
How dare you? How dare you say
How dare you?
How dare you say?
I said it first. Amel, they continue to work on her. I mean, look, she's developing. I mean, she's not like gonna be like amazing, but like she's
killed
done.
Nina Samuels, who you know deserves to die. So, I mean, on TV, she's not gonna be. I mean, it's two of your favorite performers. It's your Sophie's choice, Chris.
You keep saying this about Amel. I'm not that in like Nina's. I would rather them do more with the Nina character.
Okay.
Amel doesn't actually have a character. She's just like the French Hope. She's just angry.
She's just angry. What's your character? Angry French person. You're in. Wow. But we had all this news talk about NXT making stars. What did they do with Ilya Dragunov losing to Pete Dunne before TakeOver? Number one, nobody
watches. He's beating Walter. He's going to beat Walter, and then his first match is going to be against Dunne.
No, I think Pete Dunne gets put into this match. I think that's what happens. And because you know why? Nobody has watched Dragunov and Walter. You want to know why? Because they haven't shown it on NXT. That's only been on NXT UK. And hardly any, I mean, the views for that are below, you know, somebody taking a dump from the main roster on there. Like WWE 24, Drew McIntyre goes to the bathroom. And that will rate higher than NXT UK, which I love, but nobody's watched it. They haven't played it on the NXT TV, so nobody knows how hot of a feud this is. It's something.
No, they've done packages for Dragunov and
it's okay.
The only reason I think this stays a singles match is because they really have built all these packages around it. That's just my only thought on that. I think Dragunov wins. I don't know.
The only way I see Dragunov winning is if they've convinced Walter to go to the main roster.
I think that might be a thing.
Which I don't think he's going to do. Yeah. I don't think he's going to do it. I think he likes staying in Europe.
But he might be able to leverage a huge contract.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
For WWE right now, he could leverage them. Because we were talking the other day, or last episode, about like they can't just shake the wrestler tree and new wrestlers come out, right? Like Walter is really an answer for a lot of their problems right now in terms of who's our new monster heel. You bring in Walter, you've got your new monster heel. You know we're drawing six figures. I mean, I was seeing a sign tonight of bring back Ryback. Like these are the. That was in the crowd tonight in SmackDown. Did you see that? Bring back the big guy?
No, I did not.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah. Like, that's, I mean, this is what Vince has left to pull from. There's not that
Wouldn't
many.
Wouldn't shock me if they did. Would not
I know.
Shock me if they did.
It would not shock, especially with the new paradigm of, like, you got to be 6'2", you got to be big. No, this is what I'm saying. If you're Walter, I don't know. I know it's WWE is probably not like exciting and being in Europe is your preference. Now is absolutely the time where you could get Vince to go, I would say, the upper ballpark of six figures, probably into seven figures for this main roster contract. You've established yourself as a champion in the company. Vince needs tall people. Like, you insert your metaphor here. That's my thought. I think Dragunov wins this title.
I'm sorry, I started to laugh there because I started imagining the rumored meeting at SmackDown last week between Cole and Vince McMahon. And Cole's, or Vince's telling him, look, we got all these ideas for you, blah, blah, blah. And then in the corner of his eye, there's a monitor on, there's Walter. It's like, who the F is that? Screw you, Shorty. Get me that guy on the roster. That's Walter. You used him on a Survivor Series team. How did I not put him up here already?
And he was over like Rover. I mean, in terms of Walter, your negotiation position has never been stronger. People, when they saw Walter, were ready for Walter, even though you haven't shown him on NXT UK, whatever.
Well, I'm here, Vince. I'm here to do the Adam Cole bit. Get out of my office, Pee Wee. What the big Austrian fella? Yeah, and the rest of NXT to me.
Here's the thing about NXT. I kind of like the squash match format. For a long time, we've been talking like they need to get back to the squash matches, and I thought that, you know, Gigi Dolin, new character, she needed a squash match. She had a squash match. Who else? Who else did they have?
Who was with Gigi Dolin? Remind me. The name was that
JC Jane.
Yeah, that gimmick ain't working for her.
No. No.
She was looking awkward trying to be sex bot.
No, Gigi Dolin knows. Yeah, Gigi Dolin knows how to do this gimmick and like actually understands her character, and JC Jane is trying on something and it doesn't work. I thought that man, the opening match between Dakota Kai and Saray was fun. I liked that.
Whew. I didn't get that. I didn't get the loss for Saray. I know that it was originally supposed to be Ember Moon. And you're deciding to beat somebody big, but man, this is the thing. This is what I don't get. You don't beat somebody until they need to be beat.
Yeah.
And that's after they've already reached their pinnacle, to me. Especially for a babyface. This was not the time. Drag out somebody in the PC and just have Dakota Kai murder death her. Instead of this, we need a good match because you're not up against anybody head to head. You don't need the great matches anymore. You need to build stars. And it's much better to build up Dakota Kai, especially after she gets killed on Monday night in the main event taping by Aaliyah, of all people, who almost dropped her straight on her head with that DDT.
No, this should have went to a non-finish. I agree. But the actual work was great. It was spirited. Yes. I mean, I love the pairing a lot.
Dakota Kai took three of those drop kicks. Man, they all looked a little snug, and it was great.
Yeah, no, I'm here for that. I'm with you. Questionable the choice, but like again, that goes back to like, you know, Britt Baker and Red Velvet. Just because of the questionable finish doesn't make me entirely not enjoy the match. LA Knight. Andre Chase. I'm trying to see if there's anything else here.
DiBiase is gonna get involved in these skits. I don't need that.
But you know what? Now you brought him up. He had a little bit of a moment there on the microphone this week. He got a little lost in his promo.
Oh, DiBiase?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they won't let him ad lib. They had to do it word for word, and he forgot his line.
Yeah. No, he really was frozen up out there for a minute. I felt bad for him because I'm like, dude, like, you know, DiBiase. Also, this like kinder, gentler $1 million man character doesn't make any sense. Right?
That's my fear. My fear is that DiBiase is going to turn on Cameron Grimes and side with LA Knight, and it's just going to be more heat. And you're just like, well, then what the hell's the point of doing the Butler gimmick? You know, I mean, it's, yeah, I want to move Cameron Grimes away from LA Knight as quick as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree.
Any deep thoughts on the date?
Look, the way, this is what the way is supposed to do, you know, like these are, that we wanted last week, we wanted Dexter to join the family
and we wanted this.
And yes, it's stupid, but like, I hate the index thing, but if they're going to do it, this is exactly what I expect them to do. It doesn't excite me. I don't like it. It doesn't make me fiery angry or anything either, though.
I don't mind Gargano doing this. I miss him being a star. He's really good at this kind of comedy, though. He really is good at this. By the way, yet another NXT women's tag team bites the dust. Candice LeRae is pregnant, so she will be leaving sooner than later. That just leaves us with Zoe and Io, Kacy and Caden. That's it. That's your tag team division. Oh, wait. We may have JC Jane and Gigi Dolin.
That's it. Yeah, it managed by
unify the titles. It's time to unify the titles with the ones on the main roster that they're not going to be using for a while either. So let's just get it out of the way since Vince doesn't care about women's wrestling. How about that? Any other points to make, or can we get out of here?
No, I think we're done finally.
Cool. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at DWATG. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. I'd like to thank Manscaped. Once again, 20% off plus free shipping with the code ROPES. Chris has a Patreon. He does political podcast. Get the adjective right, Hawkins. Called Don't Worry About the Government. That's where the DWATG comes, kids. He's going to tell you about it right now.
Yeah, Don't Worry About the Government. If you want now, you can actually see the last part of every show. Like, usually we tape, like, multiple segments. I'm now putting up a free segment on YouTube, so you can search on YouTube for Don't Worry About the Government and watch a clip of it. If you want to watch the whole show, you can by supporting the show over at Patreon.com at Patreon.com/DWATG. You can get the entire show for free in an audio format on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. And, you know, check it out. Don't Worry About the Government is the name of the show.
Corbin's definitely winning a lot of money in Vegas. Shake Them Ropes, a little bit of bonus audio here about the Suicide Squad, a subject I can talk about for days on end, but I won't. I'll just stick to the movie. A little bit of background. The John Ostrander run of Suicide Squad, which pretty much starts with a limited series called Legends, is where they are introduced, and then ran from about 1987, I think, to about 1992. It's my favorite comic book. I tried to option it to Warner Brothers at a time where they didn't want comic book movies, and my movie would have been very, very different. Harley Quinn, nowhere to be seen. I am not a fan of the Harley character. I think Margot Robbie does a great job. I just think she's a bit much all the time. But for those of you who don't know what the Suicide Squad origins are, it was actually a World War II era type comic book where Rick Flag, his girlfriend, and a couple of friends, you know, it's those World War II adventure books where, like, we're going to go to this island where there's dinosaurs. And what happened to the original Suicide Squad was a Yeti. They tried to flee a Yeti, and the other three died other than Rick Flag. So Rick Flag is kind of left to be an adventurer and to go about his merry way. And he ends up with these, the Unknown Heroes, I think is the name of it. It's a group that has like the Immortal Man and other things. And so being close to the Immortal Man, he never ages because he siphons off some of the amulet that he's wearing or whatever. And then he gets basically reintroduced in Legends with Ostrander. And Ostrander is such a great writer and such a great, he has great insight into the motivations of people of dubious morality. That is his thing. If you read his they're in trade paperbacks. I highly recommend them. He understands damaged people and why they do things. He was the creator of Amanda Waller. He was also in the Suicide Squad run. He's the creator of Oracle, if you're a big Batman fan, the Barbara Gordon Oracle. When no other writer ever wanted to touch Barbara Gordon after the Killing Joke, John Ostrander stepped up. He really revamped characters like Captain Boomerang. His Deadshot is one of my favorite characters out there because it's such a twisted story. Maybe someday I'll do a podcast about the greatness of the Deadshot character under Ostrander. And because the Ostrander Deadshot is not in the original Suicide Squad. That is pretty much the Christos Gage revamp of Deadshot, which came years later. But I would also highly recommend John Ostrander's Deadshot limited series as well, if you're interested in that. But after Ostrander's run, there's a failed run by Keith Giffen who wanted to make it more of a black comedy. And he was the one who was kind of on record saying they call it the Suicide Squad, but in that first run, nobody ever died. And that's kind of true. I mean, people died occasionally on certain missions. The bombs weren't in their skull. It was around their arm. So the arm would blow off. And the only one that ever happened to was Slipknot, which was kind of recreated in in the first movie, except with that bomb. And so what Giffen did was, in the first issue, he took a bunch of characters that people loved that he wrote called the Injustice League, I think, or the Injustice Gang. I can't remember what it's called, but they were basically Justice League Antarctica in his Justice League run, and he killed them all, except for Major Disaster. And that's kind of been how the Suicide Squad has gone in further revamps. It's the current run and the run before that, it's just, you know, villains being crappy people and killing a lot of people and a lot of people dying. And I guess that's what people like. The Ostrander run is far more black ops, political. Amanda Waller is trying to keep it a complete secret so nobody finds out about it, type of thing. And these knuckleheads that are villains are doing knucklehead type of things at times. There's far more heroes that are looking for either redemption or looking for some sort of help. You know, you have Bronze Tiger, who's not really a villain, used to be a part of the League of Assassins, but he's looking for to get his memory back because it's been wiped. You know, Vixen was a member of the Suicide Squad for quite a while. Speedy did a mission with them. You had heroes like Nightshade and Nemesis and Black Orchid as a part of it. It was far more of a mix of heroes and villains than both the current squad and the movie squads. So I recommend getting the Ostrander run if you don't. I can talk about it for ages. That said, let's get to the movie. The Suicide Squad. Overall, I really liked half of it. I thought the first half was pretty darn good. It was what I expected. It was the Keith Giffen black comedy, play it for the yucks type of thing and kill a lot of people. I was expecting that in the first half. I think it really kind of went off the cliff after they rescue Rick Flag. Oh, by the way, spoilers abound. If you've not seen the movie, don't listen to my review of it as to whether I think it's good or not, because I'm going to spoil the hell out of this and talk about certain things from a Suicide Squad super fan, boomer dad age type of situation. But anyways, should have done that up top. I apologize if you've listened this far and I just ruined something for you. Yes, they rescue Rick Flag. Anyways, I think after that, when it becomes about first baddie are gone, now we're going for the big baddie, the big global threat, Starro, the Conqueror, I think it loses its way. It kind of becomes standard fare for the most part. Still some laughs in it. Performances I really liked. David Demalstrian as Polka Dot Man was phenomenal. John Cena, I called this. First three quarters of the movie, he is spectacular. He steals this movie. He is great. The problem with the Cena Peacemaker character has nothing to do with Peacemaker. Peacemaker, he's part of the Charlton Heroes that DC bought. Originally, Alan Moore wanted to use the Charlton Heroes for Watchmen, but DC wanted to use Blue Beetle and a few other characters for Crisis on Infinite Earths, one of the first mega crossovers in comics history. So Alan Moore basically just kind of copied the Charlton Heroes for Watchmen, and Peacemaker is the comedian, if you never knew that before. The Question is Rorschach, Nightshade is Silk Spectre, Blue Beetle is Night Owl, and so on and so forth. You can look it up. It's all over the internet. The problem was that John Cena had to act instead of being the knucklehead that he was for the first three quarters of the movie when he was the mole for Amanda Waller. That part made sense, that he was a mole for Waller to get this drive or whatever. The problem was he starts monologuing and act like bad guy villain. And we'd already established in the first three quarters of the movie, if someone like Ratcatcher 2 was going to stop Peacemaker from doing his job, he ain't monologuing. He's just going to shoot her and move on. Instead of giving these wooden monologues and trying to emote, and it was just bad. But the first three quarters, Cena is just so damn fantastic in this. I absolutely adored him in this. It was everything I wanted him to be in it. Idris Elba was good, but it's part of my disappointment a little bit in the characterizations of certain people. And let me get to that real quick. Idris Elba was really The Bloodsport character is literally just Christos Gage's Deadshot, just under a different name. There's nothing different about him and the Will Smith character at all. James Gunn did nothing. It's almost like he goes, Will Smith in the movie? No? Okay. Cross that out. I have Idris Elba. Do you want to play Deadshot? No? Okay. I'll make you Bloodsport, and I'll do that. Bloodsport is one of those characters that only appeared three times in comics. Robert Dubois was a Vietnam veteran who got crippled, and this is during the John Byrne run of Superman, where LexCorp is just basically, you know, villains of the week, but, you know, super, you know, given super strength or something. But so they build a Bloodsport, and they give him a Gatling gun with bullets traced with kryptonite, and send him after Superman, and he fails, and then he's sent to prison. And then all of a sudden they create this white supremacist Bloodsport who, if he can think of any kind of weapon or something like that, he can then teleport to himself. And then they had the two Bloodsports do a prison fight where the black Bloodsport won. But I guess they just kind of did an amalgam of this one where, you know, he just can have weapons appear and stuff. I thought Elba was very good, but you can see that this was Deadshot and the Peacemaker doing one-offs and types of things like that. Yeah, you know, he has the daughter who's in trouble, much like it would have been if Will Smith had come back. You know, I want Gunn to do just a little bit more with whatever character they're going to replace Deadshot with. Because to me, to make a Suicide Squad film, you need three characters. You need Deadshot, you need Captain Boomerang, and you need Amanda Waller. Rick Flagg, they didn't really do anything with him in this movie either, other than he drinks with the villains again. I mean, he's like, they don't give him any motivation. They never explain why he's still in Task Force X, which is a little disappointing. That they just, you have this great actor in Joel Kinnaman, and they've done nothing with him in this thing. And it's okay that Rick Flagg dies in this, because he also dies in the Ostrander version of the Squad. And much like other comic book characters, he, you know, they find ways to bring him back to life and things like that. But he originally died in the Ostrander Suicide Squad, and leadership went to other people like Deadshot and Bronze Tiger and Vixen to lead the team. So he's not that important to Suicide Squad mythos in terms of leadership, but it would have been nice to do something. The character that both movies have consistently gotten terrible to me is Amanda Waller. Amanda Waller got into doing this thing because she wanted to see some good come out of criminals, because of her family situation and things like that. But like, the first movie took me out of it when she killed her staff. Amanda Waller's not a sociopath, or she's not an Ostranders. In the future versions, maybe she has, and I haven't kept up with those as well as others, but she's a terrible human being in all these movies, as opposed to somebody of just questionable ethics. And, you know, it was played for last when they hit her with the cane and stuff, but she was always someone who cared about the support staff who were good people. She wanted these villains to get in line and be decent to society. And that said, the most disappointing thing of all was that they killed off Captain Boomerang. And the great thing was Jai Courtney, and those, I loved the first 15 minutes of this movie. Jai Courtney showed more in that first prologue than he did in the entire David Ayer version of the Squad. That's the Boomer I want in this movie. The rogue. He's a little, I mean, in the comic, in the Ostrander version, he's racist, sexist. He's just the biggest pig. Just outspoken. But he's the guy, to me, you know, I compare him a lot to Victor Franco, or Frankel, in The Dirty Dozen, the John Cassavetes character. He's the guy at home in The Suicide Squad. He's the villain who belongs in something like The Suicide Squad, because of his abilities, and you kind of just have to deal with the dumb shit he does, like the roguish stuff he does later to keep him in line. You know, he has his faults, but in the end, he's just a damaged person who has found his place in life after being a joke for so many years. I mean, I love the Flash and I love the Rogues, but Ostrander did such a great job of revitalizing this one-note character, and all these Rogues weren't being used by the Wally West Flash writer anyways after they killed off Barry Allen, so they're off doing like Blue Devil comics and stuff. So Boomerang is such a great character, and the way they kill him off was dumb. The rest of the characters, mostly cannon fodder, which is great. You know, Blackguard gets killed in a miniseries called Suicide Squad Raise the Flag, which was in 2007. Ostrander did it when the entire squad, half the squad turns heel on the other half of the squad because of the other thinker, the second thinker, who was a Firestone villain. And, you know, it's just him. But he's just a guy who had guns. He's nothing big in the comics. I was a little pleased by Fluva Borga, who gave more personality to the Javelin, who was killed like twice in the Suicide Squad. I think I went down, he was killed in War of the Gods, and then later, you know, just a geek villain for Green Lantern. There, Mongal is, you know, pretty much a one note character, of mongrel, alien, gladiator type in there. I liked that she just goes in, tries to crash a helicopter because she's a moron. I love that. The Weasel is ultimately expendable. Get to that in a second. MDK was like a one-shot character in like the 50s or something that they just brought in. Or TDK, the detachable kid, that's what it is. And I can't remember. Savant is a Birds of Prey character. He had been in, I think, the third reboot of the squad, or no, the second reboot of the squad, third version of the squad, on a one-off mission at one time. You know, typical hitman, I'm a professional, blah, 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 blah type stuff. I thought Rooker did, you know, Rooker turning coward on that was hilarious to me. You know, Stallone as King Shark, played more for laughs. He's a little more vicious in the comics, because he's in an original one called, it's a run of Superboy. I can't remember the name of it, but it's Deadshot, Boomerang, him, Knockout, Sam McCoy. It's pretty good. Deadshot ends up shooting Boomerang's hands. King Shark gets killed in it because he's wearing a belt across him. But, you know, King Shark has become kind of a cult character in the latter versions of the squad. Played for laughs. It's fine. It was great. Elba, I said. And then Ratcatcher 2, you know, she's the basic, I'm the heart of the squad, the thief with the heart of gold, the sentimentality of it, which I was kind of disappointed. I thought James Gunn was going to be completely unsentimental in this. I thought for sure Peacemaker was just going to shoot her after the, why are you going to kill me? I'm a child type of scene. Just blow her away and get her out of there. And, of course, Polka Dot Man, geek. I like the visual gag with the mom. The visual stuff got to be a little bit much, though. And this movie shouldn't have been 2.5 hours. It was just way too long. And you could do that by cutting out the army part. You know, the part with Harley and the dictator and things like that. To me, that's a bit superfluous. I get you're doing a little bit, you're doing the sub story because really people come to see Harley Quinn. I get that, but that was great. You know, and I think Margot Robbie's spectacular. I just want her in her own universe because she overwhelms Suicide Squad movies. I thought Pete Capaldi was okay as the Thinker. This is a version of the Thinker that is kind of brand new. So it's weird, but you know, being one up by the creature he gets, you know, once it got into standard superhero movie fare, it kind of became kind of tropey. But those first half where the team is kind of bonding with each other on both the team one on helicopter and team two in the jungle and stuff, that's what a guys on a mission movie is. You do that for 3/4 of the movie and then you make people care about them, and then you send them off to die. That's the greatness of what a guys on a movie or guys on a mission type of movie is. Surprises for me. When they announced the list of characters, I was sure I knew everybody who died. In the Ostrander version, the Weasel kills the Thinker, and then Rick Flag puts on the Thinker's helmet and kills the Weasel. I thought that they were going to do that subplot. They didn't. The Weasel lived. The Weasel's just a lame character, guys. I know people loved him because of the comic relief and stuff, and you kind of need that, but overall, he's a lame character. If they kill him in the Peacemaker series, I'd be fine with it. The character, is her name Alicia Braga? I know she's Sonia Braga's sister. Is based on another character called Sol Soria, who's killed in the last reboot of the Suicide Squad. She's killed when Killer Croc eats her, and I thought for sure King Shark was going to eat her eventually, but I loved the scene in the village. I thought that was, you know, that's, I mean, if you're going to do black comedy, just go all the way. You know, Cena passing by a guy, just chopping him up. That made me laugh. I mean, I was kind of expecting that. I'm not going to get a lot of depth in this thing. And so those are the two surprises that I got. I was shocked that Boomerang wasn't captured by a Starro or captured by these people and then kind of put away in the jail only to be left there for a while. And then, you know, that way you keep the hardcore fans happy with you. But apparently you wanted to tweak them. You can always bring back Captain Boomerang in some way. I was thinking, oh, every movie can be set before this if you wanted to really do it, but appears they're never going to do anything with the character, which I just find a tragedy. He's such a great rogue, and it looked like Jai Courtney had finally found what that character was supposed to be, and I thought he was perfect as that. As it is, I liked the coda of the weasel waking up and going away. Problem was, he was marked as dead, and he wouldn't have been on that computer, but that's continuity era. I'll forgive it. That's me being nitpicky, but overall, first half of the Suicide Squad, very, very good. Second half kind of becomes paint by numbers for me, but overall much better than the David Ayer take on it, which is just one of the worst movies I've ever seen. I hope if you have any thoughts or just want to discuss that, drop into my DMs at CrapGame13. Always happy to geek out on Suicide Squad questions, but thanks for listening.